needed to lay rubber. I cracked the window an inch. "What?" I asked. "Nice truck." "Uh-huh." "Yours?"
"For now."
"You know who I am?"
"No."
"You want to know?"
"No."
Pretty amazing that my voice was staying steady, because my heart was racing, and I had a cramp in my large intestine.
"I'll tell you anyway," he said. "I'm your worst nightmare. I'm Junkman. And I'm not just gonna kill you. I'm gonna eat you alive. You can take that as a literal promise."
His voice was deep, the inflection serious. No smile in his voice, but I knew he was getting off on the moment. I'd run into his type before. He fed off fear, and he was hoping to see fear in my face. I was looking into his mirrored lenses, my face reflecting back at me. I decided my face wasn't showing much. That was good. I was learning from the men in my life.
"Why do you want to kill me?" I asked.
"For fun. And you can think about it for a while, because I gotta cut the balls off a cop before I let myself enjoy you." There was more to it than fun, I thought. He wasn't a kid. He probably got the muscle and the attitude in prison. He was brought in by the Slayers, and I thought Connie was right. Junkman wanted something from these killings besides satisfying his bloodlust. Not to trivialize the bloodlust. I was guessing Junkman liked to kill. Probably emasculated his victims for a show of power over the enemy, and I was betting he also liked the blood on his hands. He gave me some kind of gang sign language and stepped back from the truck.
"Make the most of your last hours on Earth, bitch," he said.
A black Hummer came out of nowhere and pulled up beside me. Junkman got in, and the Hummer disappeared down the street. No chance to get the plate. I sat perfectly still and rigid until I could no longer see the Hummer taillights. The instant the lights vanished from my field of vision, all my bravado vanished as well. Tears poured out of my eyes, and it was painful to swallow. I didn't want to die. I had more donuts to eat. I had nieces to spoil. If I died, poor Rex would be orphaned. And Morelli. Don't even go there, I thought. I didn't know what to do about Morelli, but I wished I'd told him I loved him. I'd never said it out loud. I'm not sure why not. Just never felt right, I guess. And I always thought I'd have lots of time. Morelli had been part of my life since I was a kid. It was hard to imagine a life without him. But sometimes it was equally hard to imagine his role in my future. I couldn't get past 2 months of cohabitation with him without going nutty. Probably not a good sign. I had a dilemma now. My eyes were leaking, and my nose was running. I was trying real hard not to progress to open-mouthed sobbing. "Stop it," I told myself. "Get a grip." Easier said than done. I was feeling vulnerable and incompetent. The vulnerable and incompetent Stephanie wanted to run to Morelli. The stubborn Stephanie hated to give in. And the halfway intelligent Stephanie knew it would be a bad thing to leave Ranger's truck sitting in front of Morelli's house. Junkman would recognize it if he rode by, and Morelli's house would be a target for God knows what. I took the path of mindless action. I stepped on the gas, and I let the truck take me someplace. Of course, it took me to Ranger's building. I parked in my usual spot, two blocks from the garage entrance. I reached under the seat and helped myself to Ranger's gun. It was a semi-automatic. I was pretty sure it was loaded. To say I wasn't a gun person was a gross understatement. I wasn't sure I knew how to fire the gun, but I figured I might be able to scare someone with it. I retreated into my hooded sweatshirt, locked the truck, and walked head down in the rain to the garage. Minutes later, I was in Ranger's apartment with the door bolted behind me. I left the gun and the truck keys on the sideboard. I ditched the sweatshirt, hat, and Kevlar vest. I removed my wet shoes and socks. My jeans were soaked from the knee down, but I'd lived with them like that for the entire day, and I could endure a few minutes more. I'd stopped whimpering, and I was starving. I stuck my head into Ranger's refrigerator and pulled out one of his low-fat plain yogurts. No way was I going to die with the roll of fat hanging over my waistband. I scraped the last smidgen of yogurt from the cup and looked at Rex. Yum, I said. I'm stuffed. Rex was running on his wheel and didn't bother to respond. Rex was a little slow. He didn't always see the humor and sarcasm. Probably I should call Morelli, I said to Rex. What do you think? Rex was noncommittal on the subject, so I dialed Morelli. Hey, Morelli said. I gave him my smiley voice. It's me. Sorry we had a bad connection this afternoon.
You've got to practice your crackle. You've got too much phlegm in it.
I thought it was pretty good.
Second rate,
Morelli said.
What's up? Are you going to tell me about Ward? It seems he's disappeared.
He escaped from us.
Apparently he escaped from everybody. His brother hasn't seen him either.
That's interesting.
You didn't kidnap him, did you?
Kidnap is an ugly word.
You didn't answer my question,
Morelli said. You don't really want me to, do you?
Jesus.
I have something else to tell you before this conversation goes down the drain. I met Junkman today. About an hour ago, I was in Ranger's truck parked in front of the office, and Junkman rapped on my window and introduced himself. There was a long, empty space where nothing was said, and I could feel the electric mix of emotion traveling the phone line. Astonishment that this had happened. Fear for my safety. Anger that I'd allowed contact. Frustration that he couldn't fix the problem. When he finally spoke, it was in his flat cop voice.
Tell me about it,
Morelli said. He was big, around 6'2", and he was chunky. It looked like muscle, but it was hard to tell for sure. I didn't get to see his face. He was wearing dark glasses, and he had a big oversized sweatshirt hood over his head.
Caucasian, Hispanic, African-American?
African-American. Maybe some Hispanic. He had a slight accent. He said he was going to kill me, but he had to kill a cop first. He said he was doing it for fun, but I think that's just part of it. When he left, he gave me a hand signal. Probably some gang thing. Definitely not Italian.
It's almost 10 o'clock. What were you doing in front of the Bond's office at 9 o'clock?
Lula and Connie and I were out looking for Ward.
Where were you looking?
Around. There was another big silence, and I sensed things were going to deteriorate now, so I moved to wrap it up. Gotta go, I said to him. Turning in early tonight. I just wanted to check with you.
And I wanted to tell you I, like you.
Shit. I chickened out.
What was it with me that I couldn't say the big L word? I am such a dope.
Morelli sighed into the phone.
You are such a dope.
I returned the sigh and disconnected.
That went well, I said to Rex.
Eesh!
Chapter 13. It was 10 o'clock at night, and I was bone tired. I'd been cold and wet all day. I had just had an embarrassing phone conversation with Morelli. And one cup of non-fat, unfruited, unsweetened, unchocolated yogurt wasn't doing it for me.
Sometimes sacrifices need to be made, I told Rex. Sometimes you have to sacrifice weight loss for the pleasure of eating a peanut butter sandwich on worthless white bread.
I felt a lot better after I ate the peanut butter sandwich on the worthless white bread, so I passed on the milk with the 2% butter fat and drank a glass of Ranger's watery, tasteless skim. Am I righteous or what? I said goodnight to Rex and switched the light off in the kitchen. I was too tired and cold for television, and I was too grungy just to crawl under the covers. So I dragged myself to the shower. I stood in the shower until I was pruny and toasty warm. I pulled on red bikini undies and dropped one of Ranger's black t-shirts over my head. I dried my hair, and I climbed into bed.
Heaven.
Too bad the bed, the shirt, the whole comfy apartment wasn't actually mine. Too bad it belonged to a guy who could be a little scary. This brought me around to thinking about the lock on the front door. Did I throw the bolt when I came in? I got out of bed, padded to the front door, and checked the locks. All locked. Not that it mattered with Ranger. He had a way with locks. Didn't matter if it was a deadbolt, a slide bolt, a chain. Nothing stopped Ranger. Fortunately, Ranger wasn't due home. And the average garden variety thief, rapist, murderer, gang guy didn't have Ranger skills. I slumped back to bed and closed my eyes. I was safe for at least a couple more days. I struggled out of sleep thinking something was wrong. I was caught at the edge of a dream, and something was pulling me awake. It was the light, I thought. Dim, but annoying. I'd fallen asleep and left a light burning somewhere in the apartment. Probably did it when I checked the locks. Probably I should get up and turn the light off. I was on my stomach with my face smushed into the pillow. I squinted at the bedside clock. 2 o'clock. I didn't want to get out of bed. To quote Grandma Mazur, I was snug as a bug in a rug. I closed my eyes. The hell with the light. I was trying hard to ignore the light when I heard the faint rustle of clothing from the far side of the room. If I was a man, this would have been the point where my gonads ran for cover and hid inside my body. Since I didn't have any gonads, I kept my eyes closed and hoped death came quickly. After about 20 seconds of this, I got impatient with waiting for death. I opened my eyes and rolled onto my back. Ranger was leaning one shoulder against the door jamb, his arms loosely crossed over his chest. He was dressed in his usual working outfit of black t-shirt and black cargo pants.
I'm trying to decide if I should throw you out the window or if I should get in next to you,
Ranger said, not looking especially surprised or angry. Are there any other options? I asked him.
What are you doing here?
I needed a safe place to stay. his mouth curved at the corners. Not quite a smile, but definite amusement.
And you think this is safe?
It was until you came home. The brown eyes were unwavering, fixed on me.
What scares you more? Getting thrown out the window or sleeping with me?
I sat up in bed, pulling the covers with me. Don't flatter yourself. You're not that scary. Liar, liar, pants on fire. The almost smile stayed in place.
I saw the gun and the flak vest when I came in.
I told him about the death threat from Junkman.
You should have asked Tank for help, Ranger said.
I don't always feel comfortable with Tank.
And you feel comfortable with me?
I hesitated with my answer.
Babe,
Ranger said,
you're in my bed.
Yes. Well, I guess that would indicate a certain comfort level. His attention dropped to my chest.
Are you wearing my shirt?
I have to do laundry. Ranger unlaced his boots. What are you doing? He looked over at me.
I'm going to bed. I've been up since 4 this morning, and I just drove 9 hours to get home, half of it in pouring rain. I'm beat. I'm going to take a shower. And I'm going to bed. Don't look so panicked. You can sleep on the couch, or you can leave, or you can stay in the bed. I'm not going to attack you in your sleep. At least, it's not my plan right now. We can figure this out in the morning.
And he disappeared into the bathroom. Heaven help me. I didn't want to give up the bed. It was warm and comfy. The sheets were silky smooth. The pillows were soft. And the bed was big. I could stay on my side, and he could stay on his side, and we'd be fine, right? Clearly, he didn't think my staying was a sexual invitation. We were adults. We could do this. I turned on my side, face to the wall, back to the bathroom, lulled into sleep by the distant sound of the shower and the rain on the window. I came awake slowly, thinking I was back at Morelli's house. I could feel the warmth from the man next to me, and I edged closer. I reached out, and the instant my fingertip touched skin, I realized my mistake. Oops, I said.
Babe,
Ranger said, wrapping his arms around me, gathering me close to him. I meant to push away, but I was distracted by the scent of the sexy shower gel mingled with warm Ranger. You smell great, I told him, my lips brushing against his neck as I spoke, my mind suddenly not totally connected to my mouth. I thought of you every time I took a shower. I love this stuff you use.
My housekeeper buys it for me,
Ranger said.
Maybe I should give her a raise.
And he kissed me. Oh, shit, I said.
Now what?
I'm sorry. I'm having a major guilt attack over Morelli.
While we're on the subject, why aren't you in his bed?
Same old, same old.
You had a fight and you moved out?
More like a disagreement.
I'm seeing an unhealthy pattern of behavior here, babe.
Tell me about it. I didn't want to move back home because Junkman was looking for me. And I didn't want to endanger my family. Plus, they'd drive me crazy. I was going to sleep in the truck, but it led me here. The GPS was on. I just followed it backwards.
And broke into my apartment.
I had a key. You don't seem especially upset or surprised that I borrowed your apartment.
With the exception of the 7th floor,
The entire building, inside and out, is monitored. Tank called me when you pulled up to the gate. I assumed you had a good reason for needing the apartment, so I told him to let you stay.
That was nice of you.
Yeah. I'm a nice guy. And I'm late for work.
He rolled out of bed, stood at bedside, pressed speakerphone, and hit a button. A woman's voice came on.
Good morning, she said. Welcome home.
Breakfast for two this morning, Ranger said. And he disconnected.
I looked over at him. He was wearing the black silk boxers. They sat disturbingly low on his hip, and his hair was mussed from sleep. How I'd managed to stop kissing him and give in to the guilt was a mystery. Even now, I was having a hard time not jumping across the bed and grabbing him.
What was that? I asked, thankful my voice didn't sound as breathless as I felt.
Ella and Luis Guzman manage this building for me. I work here, and sometimes I sleep here. That's about it. Ella makes it easy for me. She does the cooking, the cleaning, the laundry, the shopping.
And she brings you breakfast?
She'll be at the door in 10 minutes. I've never had a woman here before, so she's going to be curious. Just smile and endure it. She's a very nice lady.
I was dressed and had my teeth brushed when Ella rang the bell. I opened the door to her, and she bustled in carrying a large silver tray.
Hello, good morning, she said, all smiles as she swept past me.
She was small and robust, with short black hair and bright bird eyes. Early 50s, I thought. She was wearing bright red lipstick, no other makeup. She was dressed in black jeans and a black V-neck knit shirt. She set the tray on the dining room table and laid out two place settings.
This is Ranger's usual breakfast, Ella said to me. If you would like something different, I'd be happy to make it for you. Maybe some eggs?
Thank you. This will be fine. It looks lovely. Ella excused herself and retreated, closing the door behind herself. She'd brought hot coffee in a silver pot with matching cream and sugar, a platter of sliced fruit and berries, a small silver dish of lox, and two small pots of cream cheese. A white linen napkin covered a basket of sliced, toasted bagels. Ranger was in the bedroom, lacing his boots. He was dressed in his usual uniform, hair still damp from the shower.
What is that?
I said, arm straight, finger pointing to the dining room. He rose out of the chair and walked to the doorway.
Breakfast?
You eat like this every day?
Every day that I'm here.
What about the tree bark and wild roots? He poured the coffee and took some fruit.
Only when I'm in a third world jungle. And I'm almost never in one of those.
I've been eating that cardboard cereal in your cupboard. Ranger cut his eyes to me.
Babe, I looked in my cupboard. You have frosted flakes in there.
So? I said. Is this the Bat Cave?
This is an apartment I keep in my office building. I have similar buildings and apartments in Boston, Atlanta, and Miami. It turns out security is big business these days. I supply a variety of services to a wide range of clients. Trenton was my first base of operation, and it's the place I spend most of my time. My family is still in Jersey.
Why all the secrecy?
We're not secretive about the office buildings, but we try to keep a low profile.
We?
I have partners.
Let me guess. The Justice League, The Flash, Wonder Woman, and Superman. Ranger looked like he was thinking about smiling.
Okay, forget the partners, I said. I want to get back to the Bat Cave. Is there a Bat Cave?
Ranger took a bagel and speared some locks onto it. You're going to have to work harder for that one. It's not in the phone book, and GPS isn't going to take you there.
A challenge.
Ranger glanced at his watch. I have 5 minutes. Tell me about Junkman.
Not much to tell. He wants to kill me. I told you everything I know last night.
What are you doing about it?
Connie and Lula and I kidnapped a slayer. The plan was to get him to talk to us about Junkman, but we haven't had any luck.
Ranger finished his bagel and pushed back from the table to finish his coffee. Kidnapping a slayer is good. Why wouldn't he talk?
He didn't want to.
Ranger paused, with the coffee cup halfway to his mouth. You're supposed to persuade him.
We were going to slap him around, but when we got him tied to the chair, it turned out none of us could hit him.
Ranger burst out laughing, and coffee sloshed out of his cup onto the table. He put the coffee down and reached for his napkin, trying not to laugh, not having a lot of luck at it.
Geez, I said. I think that's the first time I've ever seen you laugh like that.
There's not a lot to laugh about when you're knee-deep in garbage, and that's where we usually operate.
He swiped his napkin across the table, blotting up the coffee spill. If you have all this, why do you still do fugitive apprehension?
I'm good at it, and someone has to do the job.
I followed him into his dressing room and watched him open the locked drawer and remove a gun. I was working hard at keeping my eyes focused above his waist, but I was thinking, no underwear.
Do you still have your slayer hidden away?
He asked. Yes.
Is he secure?
Yes, I said.
My day is filled. But we can talk to him tonight. In the meantime, don't have any contact with this guy. Don't feed him. Let him worry.
He clipped the gun to his belt.
I need the truck. Use one of the Porsches. The keys are in the plate on the sideboard. The communication room and gym are on the fifth floor. Feel free to use the gym. Ella and Luis live on the sixth floor. You can intercom number 6 if you need anything. She'll be in today to make the bed and clean and pick up laundry. She'll do your laundry if you leave it out for her.
He glanced at his watch again.
I have a meeting scheduled. I'm assuming you want to live here a while longer?
Yes. I didn't have a lot of good choices. His mouth curved into the almost smile.
You're going to be indebted to me, babe. You want to start working on that guilt problem.
Oh, boy. He grabbed me and kissed me, and I felt my toes curl. And I wondered how long it would take me to get him undressed. And just exactly how many minutes did he have before the meeting? I didn't think I needed a lot of time. After all, he wasn't wearing any undies. That would help, right?
I have to go, he said. I'm late.
Thank God he was late. There were no minutes. No time to cheat on Joe. No time to send myself straight to hell. I smoothed the wrinkles from his shirt where my fingers had gripped the material. Do you know where the truck is?
It's in the garage. I had Tank bring it in last night. All the cars and trucks are equipped with GPS tracking. We always know where they are.
Great. Really glad I went to the trouble to park 2 blocks away. I showered and dressed and left the apartment,
being careful not to run into any of the men. I suspected they were also careful not to run into me. The arrangement felt awkward. I chose the turbo, parking at the curb when I got to the office, so I could keep an eye on the car. It was one thing to lose a bargain basement Lincoln. I didn't want to get a bunch of unnecessary holes in Ranger's Megabucks Porsche.
"Holy crap," Lula said, staring out the window at the Porsche. "Is that Ranger's turbo?"
"Yes, he's back, and he needed the truck, so he gave me the 911.
"He's going to talk to our friend tonight. He said we shouldn't have any contact with him, and he didn't want us to feed him."
"Fine by me," Connie said. "I'm not anxious to repeat yesterday's performance."
"Yeah," Lula said. "That was embarrassing."
"Anything new on the books?" I asked.
"No, but you have three outstandings," Connie said.
"Shoshana Brown, Harold Panchek, and the thumb guy, Jamil Rodriguez. Maybe you want to leave Rodriguez for Ranger."
"We'll see how it goes," I said. "I'm going to pick up Shoshana Brown this morning." Lula looked at me hopefully. "Need any help?"
"Not with Brown. I picked her up before. She's usually cooperative."
And to make things even easier, I'd chosen the flashy turbo. Shoshana would be at home smoking weed in her rat-trap apartment, watching the Travel Channel on her stolen television, and she'd happily trade her freedom for a ride in the Porsche. Shoshana lived in the projects on the other side of town. I took Hamilton to Olden and wound my way around, avoiding known Slayer territory. I parked in front of Shoshana's building and called her. Ordinarily, I'd march up to Shoshana's front door and encourage her to come with me in person. If I did that today, alone and in the Porsche, the car would be gone the instant I turned my back.
"Yeah? What?"
Shoshana said, answering the phone.
"It's Stephanie Plum. I want you to look out your front window."
"This better be good. I'm watching a show on the best bathrooms in Vegas."
"I came to take you for a ride in Ranger's Turbo."
"Are you shitting me? The Porsche? You came to pick me up in the Porsche? Hold on. I'll be right out. I just got to put on some lipstick for my new photo. I've been waiting for you anyway. I'm hoping I get sent to the workhouse on account of I got a tooth that's killing me, and they got a good dentist there. I won't have to pay for it or nothing."
2 minutes later, Shoshana burst out of her apartment and angled herself into the Porsche.
"Now this is class," she said. "I hope some of my neighbors are watching. I don't suppose you could drive me past my friend Letitia Ann's apartment so she could see?"
I drove Shoshana past Letitia Ann's apartment, Sherelle Marie's apartment, and Lucy Sue's apartment. And then I drove her to jail. Shoshana was cuffed to the bench when I left with my paperwork.
"Thanks," she said. "See you next time."
"You might want to think about staying out of trouble."
"It's no problemo," she said. "I only get caught when I need dental."
Morelli was waiting for me outside.
"Nice car," he said.
"I borrowed it from Ranger to get Shoshana. She jumped right in."
"Clever."
I was choking on guilt. My throat was dry and my chest was hot. I could feel sweat beginning to prickle at the roots of my hair. I happened to be excellent at rationalizing away acts of dumbness, but this one had me for a loss. I'd slept with Ranger. Not sexually, of course, but I'd been in his bed. And then there was the evil shower gel, and the kisses. And heaven help me, there'd been desire. A lot of desire.
It was all because of the shower gel, I said. Morelli's eyes narrowed.
Shower gel?
I made a major effort not to sigh. Long story. You probably don't want to hear it. Out of morbid curiosity, what sort of a relationship do we have?
It looks to me like we're in the off stage of on again, off again. Or maybe we're still on again, but in a remote sort of way.
Suppose I wanted to change it to full-time on again.
For starters, you'd have to get a new job. Or, even better, no job at all.
No job?
You could be a housewife, Morelli said.
Our eyes locked in stunned disbelief that he'd suggested such a thing.
Okay, maybe not a housewife, Morelli said.
I sensed a slur on my ability to housewife. I could be a housewife if I wanted. I'd be a good one, too.
Sure you would, Morelli said. Eventually. Maybe.
It's just that I was surprised because marriage is usually a prerequisite to being a housewife.
Yeah, Morelli said. Isn't that a frightening thought?
Lula and Connie had their noses pressed against the front window when I got out of Ranger's Cayenne.
Where's the turbo? What happened to the turbo? Lula wanted to know. You didn't destroy the turbo, did you?
I gave Connie the body receipt. The turbo is fine. I swapped it out after I dropped Shoshana at the police station. It was good for luring Shoshana out of her house, but it didn't suit my purposes for this afternoon. I thought we'd go looking for Pancheck again. And we need a back seat in case we get lucky. I was standing with my back to the door, and I saw Connie's eyes go wide.
Be still my heart, Lula said, looking past me through the window to the sidewalk.
I figured they were looking at either Johnny Depp or Ranger. My money was on Ranger. The door opened, and I glanced over my shoulder. Just in case, not wanting to miss Johnny Depp. But then, not entirely disappointed when it turned out to be Ranger. He crossed the room and stood close behind me, his hand at my back, heating the skin beneath his touch.
Tank said you wanted me to stop by, he said to Connie.
Connie took the Jamil Rodriguez file from her desktop. I originally gave this to Stephanie, but she's got a lot on her plate right now. Ranger took the file and flipped through it.
I know this guy. The thumb belongs to Hector Santini. Santini stiffed Rodriguez on a drug sale. So Rodriguez chopped Santini's thumb off and put it in a jar of formaldehyde. Rodriguez carries the thumb everywhere. Thinks the thumb gives him an edge.
So much for the edge, Connie said. The police have the thumb.
A lot more where that came from, Ranger said.
His hand moved to the base of my neck.
Your call, babe,
he said to me.
Do you want him?
Is he a gang guy?
No. He's an independent nutcase.
I'll keep him.
He's probably looking for a new thumb,
Ranger said.
So be careful. Most afternoons, you can find him at the bar on the corner of 3rd and Laramie.
His fingertips trailed the length of my spine, triggering feelings I was determined to ignore. And he was gone. Damn, Lula said, doing thumbs up, eyes fixed on the thumbs.
I don't know if I want to go after a guy who's going big game hunting for a thumb. I'm real attached to mine.
I made chicken sounds and did wing flaps.
Hmm, Lula said. Smart ass. What makes you so brave all of a sudden?
For starters, every move I made in the Cayenne was tracked at Range Man Central. And if that wasn't enough, I suspected I was being followed. Ranger and Morelli always ran neck and neck in the vote of no confidence race. The only difference being in the level of sneakiness. Ranger always won out on sneaky. When there's a code red danger alert, Morelli rants and raves and tries to lock me away. Ranger just assigns a goon to watch over me. Sometimes the goons are visible. Sometimes the goons are invisible. Whatever the state of visibility, they stick to me like glue, preferring death to the hideous task of informing Ranger they've lost me. I turned and looked out the window in time to see Ranger pull away in the big bad truck. A shiny black SUV with tinted windows was left idling at curbside behind the Cayenne. That's what makes me so brave, I said.
Hmm, Lula said, following my eyes to the SUV. I knew that.
Lula and I left the Bond's office and climbed into the Cayenne. I thought we'd drive past Pancheck's house first, I said. See if he's returned.
Are you going to try to lose the SUV?
I can't lose the SUV as long as I'm in this car. It's hooked into a GPS tracking system.
I'll bet there's a way to disable it, Lula said. This is one of Ranger's personal cars. And I'll bet there's times Ranger doesn't want anyone to know where he's going.
I'd had the same thought. But for now, I didn't want to disable the system. And I didn't want to lose my bodyguard. I had the flak vest and sweatshirt in the back seat, and Ranger's loaded gun in my purse. I thought I was relatively safe until Junkman made his third hit, but I wasn't taking any unnecessary chances. I glanced back at the SUV. To tell you the truth, I'm happy to have the added protection.
I hear you, Lula said.
I drove a block down Hamilton, left-turned into the burg, and followed the maze of streets that led to Cantor. I didn't see the blue Honda Civic parked anywhere near Pancheck's apartment. I parked two houses down, put my Kevlar vest on under the sweatshirt, got out of the car, and walked to Pancheck's door. I rang the bell. No answer. I rang two more times, and returned to the car. No luck, I told Lula.
Are we going back to Newark?
Not today. Ranger told me where I can find Rodriguez. I thought I'd go after him while I have an escort.
On the one hand, that sounds good, Lula said. Like, we got some help if we need it. On the other hand, if we screw up, we got a witness laughing his ass off.
Lula had a point. Maybe we won't screw up.
I just hope it's not Tank back there. I wouldn't mind taking Tank home with me someday. And it would put a crimp in my plans to embarrass myself with a lame bust.
The SUV was a half a block back. Too far for us to see its occupants. We were debating the embarrassment potential when my phone rang. Where are you? Sally wanted to know. We've been waiting for 20 minutes. Waiting? You were supposed to meet us to get your dress fitted for the wedding. Crap. I forgot.
How could you forget?
Your sister's getting married. It's not like this happens every day. How do you expect me to plan this wedding if you forget things? I'll be right there. or at the bride shop next to Tasty Pastry.
What'd you forget?
Lula wanted to know. I was supposed to go for a fitting for my bridesmaid dress. They're all waiting for me. This will only take a minute. I'll run in and run out, and we can go look for Rodriguez.
I love wedding dresses, Lula said. I might buy one, even if I never get married. I like the bridesmaid dresses, too. And you know what else I like? Wedding cake.
Chapter 14. I put the Cayenne in gear and raced off, doubling back to Hamilton. I took the turn to the parking lot on two wheels and diagonal parked the SUV next to my mother's Buick LeSabre. Lula and I jumped out of the car and sprinted for the bride shop. Ranger's men in the SUV barreled in after us. The guy on the passenger seat had one foot on the ground when I turned and pointed at him.
Stay,
I said. And then Lula and I hustled through the front door. The bride shop is run and owned by Maria Raguzzi, a dumpling of a woman in her late 50s. Maria's got short black hair and long black sideburns and fine black hair on her knuckles. She always wears a fat, round pincushion on a Velcro wrist bracelet, and for as long as I've known her, she's had a yellow tape measure draped around her neck. She's been married and divorced three times, so she knows a lot about weddings. Loretta Stonehauser, Rita Metzger, Margaret Dursky, Valerie, Grandma Mazur, my mother, and the wedding planner were all crammed into the little showroom. Maria Raguzzi and Sally were bustling around, distributing dresses. Margaret Dursky was the first to see me. Stephanie! She shrieked. Oh, my God! It's been so long! I haven't seen you since Valerie's first wedding. Oh, my God! I see you in the paper all the time. You're always burning something down to the ground. Rita Metzger was right behind her.
Stephanie! She said, isn't this so awesome? Here we are all together. Is this cool or what? And have you seen the dresses? The dresses are to die for. Pumpkin. I love pumpkin.
My mother stared at me. Are you still gaining weight? You look so big. I unzipped the sweatshirt. It's the best. It's bulky. I was in a hurry and forgot to take it off.
Everyone gaped. What is that thing you're wearing? Rita wanted to know. It, like, squashes your boobs. It's very unflattering.
It's a bulletproof vest, Grandma said. She's gotta wear one of them, on account of she's an important bounty hunter, and there's always people trying to kill her.
There's not always people trying to kill her, Lula said. Just sometimes.
And this is one of them times,
she added.
Oh, my God, Margaret said.
My mother squelched a groan and made the sign of the cross. The fudging vest wasn't in the fudging plan, Sally said. What the fudge am I supposed to do with this? It's gonna fudging ruin the fudging line of the fudging gown. It's a flak vest, not a chastity belt, I told him. It comes off.
Cool, he said. You should chill, Lula told him. You're gonna get an embolism, you keep that up.
This is a fudging responsibility, Sally said. I take my wedding planning seriously. He took a gown off the rack and handed it over to me. This is yours, he said.
Now it was my turn to gape.
What happened to Pumpkin? The other girls are wearing Pumpkin. The maid of honor has to have a different color. This is eggplant. Lula gave a burst of laughter and clapped her hand over her mouth. Eggplant. Great. As if Pumpkin wasn't bad enough. I ripped my vest off and unlaced my shoes. Where do I go to try this on? There's a dressing room through the pink doorway, Sally said, leading the way, carrying Valerie's gown, staggering under the weight of it. 5 minutes later, we were all zipped up, 3 pumpkins and an eggplant. And Valerie, who was wearing enough glaring white to make everyone snowblind. Her breasts bulged out of the bodice neckline, and the back zipper valiantly struggled to hold the dress together. The skirt was bell-shaped, meant to disguise leftover baby fat. In actuality, the skirt emphasized her hips and ass. Valerie tottered over to the 3-way mirror, took a look at herself, and shrieked, "I'm fat!" she yelled. "My God, look at me! I'm a whale! A big white whale! Why didn't someone tell me? I can't go down the aisle like this. The aisle isn't even wide enough." "It's not so bad," my mother said, trying to smooth away the fat bulge at the waistline. "All brides are beautiful. You just need to see yourself with the veil." Maria came running with the veil, draping the gauze fabric over Val's eyes.
"See how much better it looks through the veil," Maria said.
"Yeah, and if you want to really feel better, you should get a load of Stephanie and the eggplant," Lula said.
"It didn't seem that vegetable when we were looking at swatches," Sally said, eyeing my gown.
"She needs a different makeup palette," Loretta said. "Some eggplant on her eyes to balance the dress, and then some glitter under the brow to open the eye, and more blush."
"A lot more blush," Lula said.
"What am I doing getting married anyway?" Valerie said. "Do I really want to get married?"
"Of course you want to get married," my mother said, the panic clear in her voice, her life flashing in front of her eyes.
"Yes," Valerie said. "But do I want to get married to Albert?"
"He's the father of your child. He's a lawyer, sort of. He's almost as tall as you."
My mother drew a blank after that and looked to Grandma for help.
"He's Cuddlumpkins," Grandma said. "And Oogie Boogie Bear and all them things. What about that?"
"I love this," Lula said, big grin on her face. "I thought I was going to lose a thumb this afternoon, but here I am in the middle of Cuddlumpkins' pumpkin patch."
Lula turned to Sally.
"What are you going to do? Does the wedding planner get to be an attendant or something? Or do you just gotta be the wedding planner?"
"I'm singing," Sally said. "I have a lovely russet satin gown. I thought it would continue the fall theme."
"Maybe we should get the Trenton Times to cover this," Lula said to me. "Or MTV.
Maria had been jumping from one gown to the next, pinning and tucking.
"All done," she said.
Sally took me aside. "You remember about the wedding shower, right? Friday night at the VFW hall?"
"Sure. What time?"
7. "And it's a surprise, so be careful what you say to Valerie." "My lips are sealed."
"Let me see you make the zipper," Grandma said. "I always like when a person makes the zipper and throws the key away."
I zipped my lips,
and I threw the key away.
This ends Disc 7. The End. You've been listening to 10 Big Ones by Janet Ivanovich, narrated by C.J. Critt. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Recorded Books recommends Just One Look, by Harlan Coben, narrated by L.J. Ganser. An ordinary snapshot causes a suburban mother's world to unravel in an instant. When Grace Lawson picks up a newly developed set of family photographs, there is a picture that doesn't belong. A photo from at least 20 years ago of what seems to be her husband, Jack, and four unidentifiable men. After denying that he's the man in the photo, Jack inexplicably disappears with the family minivan, taking the photo with him. In the days that follow, Grace is left with doubts about herself and her marriage, and yet more unanswered questions about Jack, along with the realization that there are others looking for him and the photograph, including a fierce, silent killer who will not be stopped, no matter who or what stands in his way. You'll find a wide selection of titles in the Recorded Books catalog, including bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So to order another recorded book or for a copy of our latest listing, please call the toll-free number found on the back of this book. Don't forget to ask about easy 30-day rentals by mail. On our website, you can browse our catalog, place orders, hear about our latest releases, or tune into narrator profiles and author interviews. So visit us there at www.recordedbooks.com. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader. 10 Big Ones, Disc 8.
Lula swiveled in her seat.
Ranger's guys are still back there.
It was the second time I drove past the bar at the corner of 3rd and Laramie. Most of the street was residential, if you can call warehousing, human misery, and squalid brick cubes residential. There were no public parking lots, and curbside parking was non-existent. Half the cars parked at the curb looked like they hadn't been moved in years. I double-parked directly in front of the bar, and Lula and I got out. I didn't bother to lock the Cayenne. Ranger's men weren't going to let anything happen to his car. I had cuffs tucked into the back of my jeans. I was wearing the Kevlar vest under the sweatshirt. I had pepper spray in my pocket. Lula was half a step behind me, and I didn't ask what she was carrying. Best not to know. Heads turned when we entered the bar. This wasn't a place where women went voluntarily. We took a moment to allow our eyes to adjust to the dark interior. Four men at the bar. One bartender. A lone man sitting at a scarred round wood table. Jamil Rodriguez. He was easy to recognize from his photo. A medium-sized black man in a rhinestone do-rag. Cheesy mustache and goatee. A nasty scar etched into his cheek, looking like an acid burn. He slouched back in his chair. "Ladies?"
"You Jamil?"
Lula asked. He nodded his head yes.
"You got business with me?"
Lula looked at me and smiled. "This fool thinks we're gonna buy some." I pulled a chair up next to Rodriguez. "Here's the thing, Jamil," I said. "You forgot to show up for court." And I slapped a cuff on him.
"You sit around and wait, and good things come to you," Rodriguez said. "I've been looking for a new thumb."
And he pulled a big buck knife out of his pocket. The four guys at the bar were paying attention, waiting to see the show. They were young, and they looked hungry for action. I suspected they'd jump in when it was the right time. Lula pulled a gun out of her tiger print stretch pants and leveled it at Rodriguez. And from the doorway, there was the unmistakable ratchet of a sawed-off shotgun. I didn't recognize the guy in black filling the doorway, but I knew he'd come from the SUV. Not hard to spot one of Ranger's men. Big muscles, no neck, big gun, not much small talk. "You want to drop the knife," I said to Rodriguez. Rodriguez narrowed his eyes. "Make me." Ranger's man blasted a 3-foot hole in the ceiling over Rodriguez and plaster flew everywhere.
Hey, Lula said to Ranger's man, you want to watch it? I just had my hair done. I don't need no plaster in it. Next time, just shoot a hole in this punk-ass loser, will you?
Ranger's man smiled at her. Minutes later, we had Rodriguez in the back seat of the Cayenne, cuffed and shackled, and we were on our way to the police station.
Did you see that hunk of burning love smile at me? Lula said. Was he hot or what? Did you see the size of his gun? I'm telling you, I'm getting a flash. I could have a piece of that.
How about a piece of this? Rodriguez said.
You watch your mouth, Lula said. You're close to being roadkill. We could throw you out and run over you, and nobody'd know the difference.
I took third to State and headed south on State. I went one block, stopped for a light, and when the light changed, Harold Pancheck passed me going in the opposite direction in his blue Honda Civic.
Holy cow, Lula said. Did you see him? That was Harold Pancheck. I'd know him anywhere with his yellow square head.
I was already in motion, making an illegal U-turn. I did some aggressive driving and got myself directly behind Pancheck. Ranger's guys had been caught by surprise and were struggling to catch up, two cars back. We stopped for another light, and Lula jumped out of the Porsche and ran for Pancheck. She had her hand on the passenger side door when he looked around and saw her. The light changed, and Pancheck took off. Lula climbed back into the Porsche, and I closed the gap. I was riding close on his bumper, hoping he'd get demoralized and stop. He was checking his rear mirrors, weaving around traffic, taking side streets in an attempt to lose me.
He don't know where he's going, Lula said. He's just trying to get away from you. I bet he's never been in this neighborhood before.
That was my guess, too. We were in a poor section of Trenton, heading toward an even worse section of Trenton. Pancheck drove like a bat out of hell down four blocks on 6th Street. I hit the brakes when Pancheck crossed Lime. Comstock was one block away. Comstock was Slayerland. I wasn't following Pancheck into Slayerland.
Do we have a cell phone number for Pancheck? I asked Lula. Can we warn him he's in Slayerland?
We never got a cell for him, Lula said. And anyway, it's too late. He's turned up Comstock.
I slowly cruised a couple blocks on Lime, hoping Pancheck would pop out of Slayerland. No luck. So I turned around and pointed the Porsche in the direction of North Clinton. When we got to the station, I left Lula with the Cayenne, and I marched Rodriguez in through the front door. I know it was moronic, but I wanted the guys to see I could capture a man with all his clothes on. It was close to 5, and Morelli was gone for the day. Thank God for small favors. I didn't know what to do about Morelli. Thanks to Ranger's stupid shower gel, face-to-face meetings with Morelli were now beyond uncomfortable. Okay, let's be honest. It was more than a shower gel. It was Ranger. The man was deadly sexy. And he was walking around without underwear. I couldn't stop thinking about it. I gave myself a mental face slap. Get a grip, I told myself. You don't really know for sure. Just because you didn't